Mark Steiner, and as we look and talk in this next segment on about President Barack Obama's announcement yesterday, which was very moving to some people who watched it, we've asked Dr. Furman de Brabander to join us. Once again, professor of philosophy at the Maryland Institute College of Art and author of the book, Do Guns Make Us Free? Democracy and Armed Society. He's joined us a lot to talk about this book and this society. And he's here with us in the studio. Does that work better?
Yeah.
Got your voice. Okay, couldn't hear, but now you can. And 410-319-8888, your thoughts on what you saw. Can we begin with the clip? Is that geared up? We will wait for that for a moment when it's ready. So, Furman, welcome. Good to have you.
Thank you.
So it was interesting what happened yesterday with his announcement, and this has been one of your passions.
Right.
Your immediate thoughts after watching him.
Well, I wasn't terribly surprised to see him take this approach. I mean, I am surprised in one respect. This is there is little to gain from this politically for him, so it's clearly a personal mission of his part. He also, of course, reminded us all that he's not running again. It's interesting. So he doesn't have anything to lose. But it is interesting to note that on the Democratic side, I wonder if this is changing. This used to be a kind of issue that you wouldn't touch, and President Obama did not touch it his first time around. And many gun control people were very upset about that. He even didn't touch it in the second election. It was only after Sandy Hook that he started to talk to this issue. And now we see, so it was, you know, kind of issue that you stayed away from if you could, according to political calculations. But now we see at least the Democratic candidates are speaking to it, and they're speaking forcefully. And I wonder if this is because they think that this is something that could gain them some votes and gain them some political momentum, which would be a refreshing change.
You know, it is. And I think, again, this also speaks to what our last speaker spoke to, which I think is a deepening divide in America over who we are and what we want.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. The Republican side was almost uniformly aghast and denounced this. And, you know, what was interesting is the president pointed out, he quoted several prominent Republicans throughout his remarks, Republicans who had, including President Reagan, Saint Reagan, who had said, you know, he was in favor of universal background checks. And now not a single of the Republican Party is going to dare defy the NRA and say something like that.
Let's hear the quick clip I was referring to earlier of President Barack Obama that we all, many of us, watched yesterday.
Our unalienable right to life and liberty and the pursuit of happiness, those rights were stripped from college kids in Blacksburg and Santa Barbara and from high schoolers at Columbine and from first graders in Newtown. First graders. And from every family who never imagined that their loved one would be taken from our lives by a bullet from a gun. Every time I think about those kids, it gets me mad. And by the way, it happens on the streets of Chicago every day.
So that was just a piece of it, but it was one of the most, I think, profound
Absolutely.
Emotional moments.
Yes.
Beyond that emotional moment, I mean, I'm glad he said Chicago because they're often the divide in this country comes, well, you know, you worry about white children in
right.
Connecticut, but what
right.
about our black children in the community?
Right.
And so that bridge is really important to make for people
Absolutely.
To understand what we're facing.
Absolutely. I mean, the mass shootings get all the attention, but the ongoing carnage in our cities is really where the highest death toll is from this, you know. So it was very important that he mentioned this. I'd like to make two points about that. I'm very pleased you showcased that quote in particular, because I think one of the there was something new in his speech yesterday, and it was those comments about how this gun violence undermines our rights. I have never heard him say that before, and I think that's crucial. The gun, and I've argued this for a long time, that the longstanding problem of the gun control movement, and let's be honest, they've had a lot of problems lately. They have not been winning this battle. The NRA is beating them soundly. And I think one major problem is their general approach of admitting that they need to impose these regulations to limit our freedom. And the NRA jumps all over this, and they make guns equivalent equivalent to freedom, and they win the day. The president came out yesterday and he said, look, all these guns and all this gun violence, this undermines our rights. This undermines our freedom. And that's a welcome new approach, and I think that's an approach that can resonate. I would also say I'm pleased that he was angry, because one thing that's been lacking is there is a very small minority that's driving this debate right now. The NRA members is a minority of NRA members who are getting their way. And the vast majority of Americans, 90% of Americans favor gun control measures, including universal background checks. The key problem is that the majority has not appreciated the urgency of this issue, and they have not matched the passion of that very passionate minority. And I think some anger is needed.
So I wonder, in some ways, many people have argued in pieces I've read post Obama's press conference that what he will be doing in terms of pushing the federal idea of universal background checks, internet sales, and more is an interesting step, a good step, but it won't have much of an effect on the distribution of guns in America, but A and B. So I wonder what you think about that. Let's stop there.
Well, I mean, you know, he did what he can. He would like universal background checks for every firearm transaction in the country, public and private. Even a transfer from, you know, one person to another without any money exchanged. But that's not going to happen. That's what Congress blocked back after Sandy Hook. That's what this Republican Congress has said they're not going to tolerate at all. So what can you do? Well, he decided what he can do is that he can and Hillary Clinton had echoed this earlier in her campaign that she would be in favor of this, tightening the definition, because it's very, very great now, tightening the definition of who is in the business of selling firearms and expanding or at least just being clearer on who counts, because right now we have all kinds of people that are in the business of selling firearms, but they are not declared as licensed firearm sellers, and so they are not required to perform background checks on sales, which is insane. One of the numbers, and the internet is growing as one of the primary places where this is going to happen. And by the way, the Chattanooga shooter at the Marine recruitment office last summer, he acquired 4 firearms, including 2 assault weapons, online without a background check. One of the numbers he released yesterday, President Obama, is that some studies have revealed that 1 in 30 of the purchasers of weapons online have a criminal background, but they are not, of course, required to do a background check. And hopefully this law and these measures in tightening the definition of a seller and transaction, they can fix that somewhat.
So I politically, what this sets up, this is obviously the book you read, an incredibly wonderful book, Do Guns Make Us Free? And the arguments, the powerful arguments here. The question is, what does this set up in terms of the future political debate? It seems to me this is a really interesting moment.
It is. I think it is.
About where this debate might take place and maybe even become a part of it that stimulates voters and people on both sides of this issue.
That's right.
In this coming election and political period.
I think so. Well, I'll go back to a point I was making earlier, is that I'm sensing a little bit of a change in the political winds. I mean, it's been very tough going for the gun control movement for the last decade or more. They have been beaten soundly on every front, even when they are producing all kinds of very persuasive, compelling data from public health circles, some of which President Obama revealed last year. And this is what has been so astounding to me, is in the face of such compelling data, why is the gun rights movement winning? And why is it a minority that's winning? And I think it's because this issue has not, the urgency of this issue has not been appreciated. And I noticed that President quoted Martin Luther King a lot yesterday with that claim about we need the fierce urgency of now. You know, President Obama, this was not a cause for him in 2008. This was not a cause for him in 2012. We were told that this was his attempt at triangulation, right? He was trying to be a centrist in the vein of Bill Clinton. And so they wouldn't touch certain issues that irritated right-wing voters, and gun control was one of them. Well, now that may be changing. And in the last decade, so I draw the analogy, and by the way, the gun control movement, they look to the gay marriage movement as an inspiration. You know, only 10 to 12 years ago, that topic was something that candidates of both sides of the aisle would not touch, but the Democrats wouldn't touch it. And now things change very quickly, and now that's an issue that the Democrats campaign on. So I'm very encouraged to hear the three Democratic candidates take up the issue of gun control. They're not going to run away from it anymore. They're going to campaign on it, and that's a refreshing change.
I think that, you know, when you look at the end of today's program, I'm going to read the names of the 344 people and their ages who were killed in the streets of Baltimore in this last year. And when you take that with the fact that the majority of gun deaths, actually, by suicide, many of them,
yes,
take place in states with most lax gun laws,
yes,
in the country, right?
That's right. They do.
In places that are livid about what President Obama has just
said. That's right. I mean, and I'm looking at the data right now. You know, the top 10 or so states in terms of that have the lowest gun-related deaths, they have the strongest laws. Those with the loosest laws, they have the highest gun-related deaths. That's borne out by the data. And Maryland, actually, believe it or not, fares quite well in this. It's just at the edge of the top 10, and that's given our high murder rate in Baltimore as well, you know?
This speaks to the kind of strange, eerie relationship here that the U.S. Attorney for New York spoke about this morning, Cyrus Vance, which is that these internet laws have allowed illegal gun sales only 5%, I think he said, of the killings and murders in poor communities in New York come from guns that were bought in New York.
Right. That's right.
They're bought on this from the internet outside. And so
They're funneled from the South in general.
So you're allowing a probably mostly white, fairly conservative group of gun runners and sellers in America to fuel the violence that's killing thousands of young black people in this country. We don't think about that bridge, but that is the bridge.
That is, I think that's one way of putting it. That's a very valuable way of putting it as well. I mean, I've said this for a very long time. Cities like Baltimore and Chicago are assailed. They're mocked by gun rights people, right? They look at these cities and they say, hey, look, you guys have such strong gun laws, and look, your violence is out of control. Clearly, these gun laws don't work. Yeah, but the point is, we are surrounded by jurisdictions with loose gun laws.
Pennsylvania, Virginia.
Yes. And the West Virginia. And they come in what's called the Iron Highway. I mean, that's what they refer to the 95, funneling the guns from the South up to the North. One of the measures that the president tightened yesterday is that gun arms dealers, they are now required by law to report missing or stolen cachements of guns. That means they weren't required to do that beforehand.
Which is madness.
It is madness. And a lot of those guns, the New York media discovered this in shootings of police officers last year, that the guns in those crimes had come from just such incidences of stolen or lost guns from gun dealers in Georgia and the South.
And I think that one of the things that happened today, and some other people are doing it, and I think it's imperative for people like me, who is a gun owner, to say enough is enough.
Mm-hmm.
That background checks have to happen.
Yeah.
That we have to control the madness in this country. Just cannot let it proliferate.
Right. I think so. I think it's very valuable. I mean, and one of the enduring problems that I have and that I want to work on and try to understand better is how to speak to gun owners in this way. Right now, gun owners are alarmed. Many gun owners are alarmed, and they are instinctively reactive and reject any kind of approach. Quite frankly, I notice that a lot of them take it personally, and I don't know. We need to learn how, on the gun control movement, how to speak to that and to assuage their concerns, and that I'm not sure of yet.
So, folks, I'm sure we have the few minutes we have left. If you want to join us, 410-319-8888. This is something that I think is going to become an explosive topic, as I said earlier to Furman here in America in this political
year. No pun intended, right?
No pun intended. Maybe there was. I'm not sure. It could be an unconscious pun
intended. Well, we're saturated with it, right? Saturated with gun culture. It's all over our language.
Right.
And everything we do, you know. So it's a deep issue.
And I think that the fact that I think he's not running, as you pointed out, is why he was able to do this.
Yes.
But he's all, you could see in President Obama's face, no matter how many disagreements you might have with him or not have with him over certain issues he's done, banking and foreign policy, etc. It was clear this emotion was real.
Yes.
And very powerful. I think that he's...
That's right.
And I think people are moved by that, both intellectually and emotionally.
I hope so. And I think the issue is that, you know, there's great skepticism whether these measures will be effective or sufficient, but I don't think that was his main purpose. I think his main purpose was to say, hey, this is an issue. It's not going away. I'm not going away on this issue, and I want this to be at the forefront of the campaign.
And I think just as they're probably... The federal government's afraid to kind of take on what happened in Oregon because they don't want an explosion that fuels the right moving up in America. I think that the same thing happened in gun control, but something changed. I think that in America, for America, watching all these kind of killings that have taken place across America in mass, and also what has erupted since the killing of Trayvon Martin.
Right.
These things have coalesced.
I think so.
To alter the conversation.
I think so, and I hope so.
Let's try to get a very quick call in here. Dave in Annapolis, you're on the air. Hi, Dave, you're on the air. Can we pot him up?
Hello?
Hi, we're on the air.
Oh, hi. This is Connie. I'm in Charles Village.
Oh, okay.
I just wanted to make a quick comment that the gun advocates don't want guns in the hands of minorities. My black son went to accompany his Asian girlfriend to purchase a gun that she wanted, and the gun shop owner called the police, and when they came back after their three-day waiting period, they drove away with the gun in the car and were surrounded by what they thought were gangsters, these unmarked police cars and undercover cops,
right.
Jumped out and drew guns on them. And he could have bought a gun if he wanted to. He just didn't care to have one until he was a medic in Iraq for 15 months. Then he had a gun. But that was just an example of racial profiling.
I appreciate the call very much, and an interesting story. Your son sounds like a very interesting young man. Let's go.
I think that's a very important and interesting point that she makes, and it doesn't surprise me in the slightest. One thing I notice in the media is that all of these mass shootings get attention. Well, with the San Bernardino shooting, they were lamenting, the right wing was lamenting the terrorist involvement here. And Muslim terrorists, but the problem that some media outlets pointed out that there have been more deaths committed at the hands of right-wing white supremacist terrorists than Muslim terrorists.
And I wish we had more time in this segment. Dave is calling from Annapolis. We can't take his calls. We have to break. Is that correct? He wanted to talk about gun regulation. It doesn't change anything. That's not why you're not coming on, because I think there's a valid argument to be made there, and I think we should have that discussion. So I apologize that we've run out of time here on the show, but we will continue this conversation in coming weeks and look for Dave and all the other callers to come back in and really get into it with us here. I want to thank Dr. Furman de Brabander, professor of philosophy at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and author of Do Guns Make Us Free? Democracy and Armed Society. Furman, thanks so much.
Thank you.
We're going to take a very brief break, and when we come back, we'll be joined by Todd Oppenheim, who is running to become a judge here in Baltimore City. And then Karen Hoopert will join me to talk of City Paper, to talk about their special issue on murders in Baltimore. And we will read the names of all 344 men, women, and children who died because of violence in Baltimore.